News.
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Stu Nicholson, in for Ann today. The last time Congress passed a comprehensive federal transportation bill was in 2005. That bill expired in 2009, 1 year after we all first felt the economic pinch of $4 a gallon gasoline, remember that? And started considering options like buying more fuel-efficient cars, driving less, using public transportation like trains and buses, or biking and walking where we needed to go. Many of us have taken what steps we can to cope, and that helps, up to a point. But while we've been doing that almost 3 years later, Congress has failed to pass a long-term transportation funding bill, something that advocates of all transportation modes generally agree is desperately needed. Meanwhile, highways and bridges are crumbling, and funding for new and better public transportation, as well as other alternative transportation options, is left in uncertainty. And of course, we are now being revisited, as if by some ghostly Dickens character, the ghost of $4 a gallon gas. Only it's no ghost. It's a very real specter. Is it because of hyperpartisan politics, or because members of Congress don't really feel the pain at the pump that we're feeling? Or is this about a legitimate debate over how transportation should be developed and funded in this nation? We'll have several takes from a quartet of guests during this hour of All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. But first, let me pose a question that you might be asking, and if you've got questions, to give us either give us a call on 614-292-8513 or email us your question at allsides@wosu.org. But think about a couple of questions like this. What do you think is the solution to the highway funding problem? And how worried are you that gas prices are rising and are limiting your driving or your ability to find other alternatives? So think about those questions. And if you've got some ideas, some questions, comments that you'd like to phone in, again, the number is 614-292-8513. And the email is allsides@wosu.org. We would like to first welcome, joining us now is Jack Basso, the Director of Finance and Management for the American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials, or AASHTO for short. AASHTO is kind of the umbrella organization for the various state departments of transportation, including the Ohio Department of Transportation. We should take note that we asked for ODOT Director Jerry Ray or another ODOT representative to speak on the subject, but that request was declined. So, Jack, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Stu. Thanks for having me this morning. I appreciate it.
Jack, you've got kind of a 1,000-feet-up view of what's been happening with the transportation bill on behalf of your state-level counterparts. Simple question first. What is the impact on all of us of not having a long-term federal transportation funding bill? Who gets hurt by this and how?
Well, I think virtually, Stu, every state is constrained by this. By that, I mean this, that 45% of the capital programs, meaning long-term capital programs in the highway and transit world, comes from the federal funding source in Washington. That being the case, when we're operating on short-term extensions, and I might add we're on the ninth of those extensions going on for 2 years, the latest one goes on for 3 months, very, very difficult for any state to make a rather large capital commitment when you can't be sure that the funding will be fully there to pay for it, because the federal government represents, on a project, about 80% on average of the costs.
Mm-hmm. And we're actually seeing some of those impacts now with the delay that ODOT had announced with the major 7071 split project downtown. That's been put off for possibly up to 15 years, and we'll talk a little bit about that a little bit later on, but. It's interesting, talking about who gets hurt. I pulled a quote from the Columbus Dispatch the other day. Jack Fresh, the director of the Athens County Bureau of Job and Family Services, was recently quoted in the Dispatch about the impact that transportation costs are having on the poor and unemployed, who are usually the most likely to need public transportation, or maybe they've got an older car that really isn't in good shape, and they're really kind of in straits. But they quoted Mr. Fresh as saying, "We're putting folks in an impossible situation. Transportation is a huge issue," he said, noting that the expense of gasoline, car insurance, and repairs for someone living on a $400 monthly check. It strikes me that as much as we hear politicians on both sides speak about the need to connect people with jobs, is it fair to say that there is a disconnect about the impacts of the lack of a long-term source of predictable funding for a full array of transportation choices?
I think you could say that currently. At least as far as my organization goes, we've spent a lot of energy on trying to make those connections. For example, for every $1 billion we invest in the highway or transit programs, we support about 30,000 jobs throughout the economy. Secondly, there's no question, it's well documented by a whole array of creditable organizations, that we're dramatically underfunding our needs in both of these areas to the tune of funding about 40% of what we need to do on an annual basis at all levels of government. So, yes, I think clearly the impacts are there.
According to, and I've been sitting here sifting through a lot of articles the last couple of days about this. There's an April 1st article in The Hill, which is kind of the newspaper of record for Capitol Hill in Washington. And there's a prediction made by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce that we may yet have another extension and kind of kick the can into the lame duck session of Congress after the next election. Do you think members of Congress are really grasping that more delays really makes them look like they can't get anything of importance done, especially on something as huge as this?
Well, yeah, I think members are, although I will tell you right now we're at a critical point. Interestingly enough, in this debate, the Senate, the U.S. Senate, has actually passed a two-year surface transportation bill, MAP 21. The House is now grappling with considering doing the same, and the 90-day extension, I would hope, for our part, actually produces movement on getting a bill passed in both houses, getting it to conference, and getting this process completed. But again, I think members are clearly becoming well aware of this problem. I suspect as they're home on the recess, which they are for the next 2 weeks, they'll hear a lot more about it, too.
But is that awareness enough to really spur some action, or are we looking at, you know, probably yet another extension, you know, into the post-election time or even after the first of the year? And what kind of impact is more delay going to have on a lot of these much-needed transportation projects, whether they're highway, rail, public transportation, bikeways, that sort of thing?
Yeah. Well, it's a very good question. Here's the situation as I see it from here. I'm optimistic that we will see movement over this 90-day period. The House of Representatives, the Speaker, and the leadership has outlined their desire to move forward actually on a long-term bill, a five-year bill. Money is the issue here, or lack of money at the moment is the issue. But I'm reasonably optimistic that given the amount of concern that's being expressed about this and coalescence of all levels of government around getting something done, the House will start to move. And then I think there's a reasonable chance that we could actually produce a bill. The question is for how long and how we pay for it. But I still think there's potential exists for that.
So, and you actually answered my next question, which was whether or not you have any hope that this is going to that this is actually going to happen. But I'm also starting to hear some advocates argue that that one of the main issues or the root issue that we're dealing with here on a national level is that we really don't have a national transportation policy. What we've got essentially, in their view, is a funding system that silos funding primarily into highways and then aviation and then maybe increasingly smaller silos for public transportation and other alternate means of moving people and goods. If this is a funding problem, is this the result of legislative jousting over a transportation bill ignoring a larger problem?
Let me make two comments on that. Both bills, MAP 21, which is the Senate's passed bill, and the House bill, which is H.R. 7, both have dramatic policy changes that would streamline these programs, consolidate, for example, the highway categories, which you mentioned silos are 120 of them now, down to about 30, cut them by categorical breakdowns by 75%, eliminate earmarks and so forth. So I think Both those bills have policies that could go a long way toward addressing this question of silos and multimodal applications of funding and so forth. The real issue, though, centers around where does the money come from, because the Highway Trust Fund, since 2008, has been surviving on general fund transfers, not gas tax. Gas tax is flowing in, but it's been short by a dramatic amount of money, total of $35 billion over that period of 3 years.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you should say that, because there's a story in this morning's newspaper, the Columbus Dispatch, reporting that high gasoline prices in the first quarter of this year have slashed the demand for gasoline. And to quote a number, gasoline demand fell by 225,800 barrels per day to 8.19 million barrels a day, the lowest January demand in more than a decade. And I know from speaking with state transportation officials, and I'm sure the feds are in the same boat as you say, that if people are using less gasoline, that also means less gas tax revenues coming in.
You're absolutely correct, Stu, and that's one of the things we've been observing and watching, and it's quite dramatic. One of the easiest ways to figure out nationally what's going on with this, there's a calculation how many vehicle miles people travel a year. And in 2008, that vehicle miles travel figure, which had been rising for 30 years at about 2 or 3% a year, actually declined below the previous year and has not yet recovered to what it was in 2008. That tells us we're going to be short gas tax revenue right there.
Yeah. And so what's being talked about as an alternative? I know we had a 21st century transportation task force that was put together under the previous gubernatorial administration here in Ohio to make recommendations on how to develop and fund transportation. One of the ideas that was talked about was raising the state gasoline tax and then indexing it and devoting a portion of it to certainly to highways, and yet another dedicated portion to all other forms of transportation in the state. But it never even got to the floor of the General Assembly. As soon as somebody heard the word gas tax increase, everybody ran and hid under the table. But yet you still see this coming up. There, we've got a federal gas tax, I understand, that hasn't been raised in a long, long time.
Yeah, in 20 years, to be exact, and was raised last in 1993. And, there are, in the short term, I think particularly if we're going to use user fees, and then I'll mention a couple of other things. Gas tax is the quickest and simplest thing, mechanically to address. It's also politically the most difficult. In Washington, you get exactly the same reaction, members of Congress diving under their desk when you bring this subject up. So it's not unique to the states, believe me.
Do you think it's going to get to a point anytime soon? We're kind of coming up toward, on the end of the segment, but briefly, do you think this is coming to a point finally where somebody's going to have to basically, swallow deep and show some political courage and say, look, we got to do something, and this is what we have to do?
I do. I think that things have to be done, and there's a whole array of things, including the traditional revenue components, tolling. Public-private partnerships have come on the horizon as another source of potential capital. All of those things have to combine to help us to really address a ever-growing problem here.
The debate goes on. Jack, I want to thank you for joining us this morning on All Sides. We're going to take a little break here. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.
The WOSU Member Card Benefit of the Month for April is the Ohio Historical Center. Enjoy 2-for-1 regular admission to either attraction, excluding special events. Become a basic $60 member and get your member card by going to WOSU.org. And WOSU Public Media presents Chefs in the City 2012, featuring celebrity chef Hubert Keller, host of the PBS series Secrets of a Chef, along with an elite group of Central Ohio culinary greats. The event and TV show are coming up in May, with a culinary-themed auction beginning online April 15th. Included will be Chef Travis Hyde of Ella in New Albany, who is showcased all this week on our Facebook page. Be sure to like Chefs in the City on Facebook or visit WOSU.org/chefs. And it's 53 degrees in downtown Columbus with some sunshine, mostly sunny skies. Today, a nice day with a high of 75 degrees. Showers and thunderstorms are likely for tonight, a low of 54. A slight chance of rain for Wednesday and a high of 63. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Stu Nicholson. I'm subbing for Ann for a few days this week. We're talking about how we fund major transportation projects in the United States and how the lack of a long-term federal transportation bill is being felt statewide in Ohio and even more locally in the greater Columbus area. Congress just passed yet another extension, I'm told the ninth such extension of a transportation bill that originally expired in 2009. It leaves state and transportation agencies in somewhat of an uncertain state, delaying major projects like the 70-71 split downtown, in some cases for years and even decades. So what's the impact on the state and local level? We've got two guests to give us their take on that, and I urge you, if you got some questions, to give us a call at 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Our two guests are Mark Donahue, who is the president of the Ohio Public Transportation Association and the CEO of the Greater Dayton Regional Transit Authority. Welcome to All Sides, Mark.
Well, thank you, Stu. It's great to be on.
It's good to have you on here. We also have Bob Vitale, who is a reporter covering transportation issues for the Columbus Dispatch, who, as oddly enough, has a story about transportation funding and some of the impacts in today's Dispatch issue of the Dispatch. So let me actually talk to Bob. Go to Bob first and put the question out there. What is the lack of long-term funding doing to the Ohio DOT's ability to deliver and advance on major projects like this?
Stu, that's a big factor in ODOT's plans to delay projects around the state. In January, ODOT Director Jerry Ray proposed delaying 34 projects around the state in Cleveland, the Interbelt project in Cleveland, here in central Ohio, future phases of the 70-71 reconstruction of the interchange up on 270 and 23 and 315, in some cases up to 19 years. And part of the reason they had to do that, Jerry Ray said they were way over program. They've been promising projects to people around Ohio for years, and money's declining. Part of it is the uncertainty at the federal level. ODOT is assuming no increase in federal funding for the foreseeable future, and that's what's causing them to consider these delays.
And there is a little bit of optimism out there, according to your story, that you're quoting Nick Gill from the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission, and he seems to be optimistic that there may be some action coming.
He thinks there's bound to be a transportation bill at some point, and that there will be an increase from Washington at some point. They said they're not pie in the sky optimistic, but they're a little more optimistic in their projections than ODOT is.
And in listening to Jack Basso in the first segment, did you hear anything that really gave you pause or made you think that maybe Nick Gill's onto something?
Well, I think they're bound to pass something at some point. One thing that made me that I remembered as Jack was talking, I've covered in the last few months, I've covered events where Congressman Steve Stivers was speaking. He's a Republican from Columbus. I've covered events where Sherrod Brown was speaking, our Democratic senator, where Jerry Ray is speaking, who's appointed by Republican Governor Kasich. everybody wants a transportation bill. I think the devil's in the details of what everyone wants, and that's where they can't come to terms.
As Jack Basso said, everybody agrees, but nobody can agree on how to pay for it.
Exactly. Everyone knows there needs to be one, though.
Let me turn to Mark Donahue. Mark, you oversee a regional public transit authority in Dayton, but you also represent Ohio's big and small transit providers through the Ohio Public Transit Association. What are you hearing from your counterparts around Ohio about the delays and the continued extensions, as we said earlier, nine straight extensions of the current transportation bill?
I tell you, it's this whole issue of uncertainty that's tough for our organizations. When they try to plan, especially major capital investments, whether that's a bus rapid transit system in Cleveland or Cincinnati or even Columbus, or rail upgrades in Cleveland, without a long-term robust bill, you can't do that. You can't plan for these future capital needs and really plans to address the needs for people to access jobs. A lot of the new jobs we find are on the fringes of the urban areas, and they're a little more difficult to serve than maybe traditionally. And I might surprise you a little that, there's also, we obviously work very closely with the people at AASHTO on the highway side and with Director Ray and others because, the lack of our ability to fund these other infrastructure projects, roads and bridges, for example, they have a huge multiplier impact on the local economy. And most of our urban transit systems are very reliant on a strong local economy because we're sales tax funded locally. So it has that other impact that people don't imagine. That's why we support, a very robust bill that funds the true needs that are out there on a long-term basis.
And you talked a lot just a bit ago about the impact this has on people trying to find jobs and get to work and get off public assistance and I'll go back to a quote from the director of the Athens County Bureau of Job and Family Services who was quoted recently in the Dispatch about the impact that these transportation costs are having on the poor and unemployed. The exact quote is, "We're putting folks in an impossible situation. Transportation is a huge issue." And he noted the expense of gasoline, car insurance, repairs for somebody living on a $400 monthly assistance check. So your point seems well taken that this bill has impacts that are well beyond building a new highway.
Absolutely, Stu. I know in our case here in Dayton, and I think it's the same in other cities, quite often. If we get new investment in our community, if you really dig through the numbers, you find that the majority of the new jobs are entry-level jobs. Entry-level jobs need access by transit, to be a situation where the employer doesn't have to worry about turnover and the employee's ability to get to work. It's critical. Sometimes those entry-level jobs are 80% of the new jobs.
We've got an email that just came in, an email comment from Matt, saying that gas prices need to be higher, in my opinion. At the same time, businesses and individuals of limited means need to have alternatives to burning gas to move their goods and get around. Thus, a comprehensive transportation plan is needed. I bike as much as possible and wish more people would join me. Certainly we're seeing a lot more people turning to these options. I recently saw the report that COTA led the nation in terms of overall increases in ridership, and I'm sure you're probably seeing that same thing in the Dayton area and around the state.
We really are. Everyone is seeing double-digit increases in ridership. I happened to be at an event in Washington a few weeks ago with Curtis Stitt, the CEO of COTA, where it was announced that COTA was the fastest growing of the urban transit systems in our nation, which is really cool. In Dayton, in February alone, we were up over 17%, and I know all the major cities in Ohio are seeing similar increases. It's obvious that people are making a choice to find a way. And for some, as you said, Stu, they're putting their bicycle in the rack, whether that's to complete the front end or the back end of the trip, but they're finding creative ways to do their commuting now.
But you're kind of caught between the devil and the deep blue sea running a transit system because, the good news is ridership is up. The bad news is you don't have any steady source of dollars to try and improve the service, bring in more buses, take on major initiatives.
It's a great point you make, because even though, you know, I will say till I'm blue in the face, that's a good problem to have. If we can't make a commitment, you know, buses, to get a bus these days, it takes about 18 months from the time you place the order to the time you take delivery. And I know Code has faced some challenges with that, you know, in those delivery times when you're trying to expand your service. You need to have that commitment of the federal program, basically, to know that you'll have the ability to fund the capital assets you need to make the system work.
Let's go to a caller right now. We've got Mike in the Short North who has a comment to make. Mike, thanks for joining us the show.
Hi. I wish we would just raise the gas taxes and do the construction on the roads that needs to be done. We're paying for it anyway. I live midtown, where now I have to go miles out of my way to get on the freeway ramp to even get started. And I'm spending my money. We're all spending our money going out of our way, waiting in traffic. You're spending that money, whether you're wasting it on time when you're in traffic and gasoline that's going up just because your engine is idling and you're not getting anywhere. You're spending it whether you're doing it that way or raising the taxes. For my money, I'd rather we just raise the taxes and be done with it. But it seems like we're all being held hostage by the Tea Party Taliban.
Mike, thanks for your comment on that. Jack, Mark, we want to get a reaction to that from you. You know, Mike was talking about raising the gasoline tax. Are you sensing, as you talk to our delegation in Washington or our state legislators, that there is yet any appetite for doing that?
I there have been comments previously, and I would agree with them that it's you're not allowed to use certain words, you know, in the halls of Congress and other places. And it's funny, you know, if you think back since 1993, I believe, when the last time the gas tax increased, you probably could have added a dollar to the gas tax and no one would have noticed over that period of time. And I agree with the caller that it's time to do it. Interestingly, in Washington recently, you know, in this last debate on the current bill, you know, we were hearing more and more people saying that the time is coming when the public's going to stand up and say, we want elected officials who are willing to act. And willing to act sometimes means we've got to address some of these revenue issues, because if we want Ohio to grow and prosper, we need to make some of these investments in infrastructure.
I'm curious, what are you hearing from, you know, literally from inside the bus, from your riders? What kind of comments, and I would say especially the riders that are new to public transit, those new people that are coming in and riding for the first time, for instance, because of the impact of gasoline prices?
Well, I can tell you, just a few hours ago, I was on our Route 9 and listening to both the bus driver and a full load of people saying, you know, we need to add more service on these lines. We need to get people moving. You know, that we're having trouble keeping a schedule because of how many people are riding the bus. So, you know, I hear it because I'm a customer of our organization and I ride as often as I can. And I hear it every day. And a lot of times, like this morning, I stood on the length of my trip because of the crowd. And, you know, they know what they want and they know what they need. So we're hearing loud and clear. And I know my compadres in the industry would tell you that people don't like to stand on a bus.
That might be an interesting photo or video to capture and send to our congressional delegation, and just say, hey, you know, people are wanting this. So what's up with the transportation bill?
And I don't think you can understate the importance of, you know, the 6-year bill, because especially for systems, and I know Bus Rapid Transit, or BRT as we call it, it's been a huge success on Euclid Avenue in Cleveland and other cities. There's not a major city in Ohio or elsewhere that's not considering a similar investment. Those things keep getting pushed further and further down the road if you can't show that, if you can't demonstrate that you can have that project funded, you won't unless you have a 6-year bill.
Let me go back to Bob Vitale from the Columbus Dispatch here really quick. Bob, what are you hearing? I'm sure you've probably ridden COTA buses here in Columbus to and from work or just getting around. What are you hearing? What are you seeing?
Well, the folks at COTA have said for a while now that it seems that $4 a gallon gas is the tipping point for a lot of people, and I'm sure that's inched up through the years. $4 a gallon is where people start changing their habits, where they start driving less, where they start riding a bike to work, where they start picking up a bus schedule. And I know they, you know, they've braced for it. They're one of the problems for transportation authorities too is they're paying more for gasoline as well. You know, I think COTA has the same issues that that Mark talks about in Dayton. They're, you know, their buses passing people by because they're full. So they're trying to accommodate everybody as well.
Got a couple of comments that have come in on Facebook from Jordan on Facebook. With the apparent inability of the federal government to provide significant capital and leadership, I'm curious what effects could be seen in privatizing transportation infrastructure and further deregulating the industry. I'll do that as a toss up. Mark, do you want to comment on that?
Sure. You know, if you look at our industry, we have privatization throughout it, and in the state of Ohio, I would think you would see. Most of it is in the door-to-door services that most of our communities provide that we call ADA paratransit. Over 80% of that is already outsourced. Some folks privatize the management of their operation, or they do shared services. So there's quite a bit of that that already exists, and there's some savings from that. It may not be as substantial as some people suggest it is, but it certainly helps stretch the dollar to some degree.
And we've got Dave on the line here in Columbus. Let's talk to Dave. He says gas prices are so high and revenue is higher. Dave, are you still with us here? Dave, you're on the air. Thanks for joining the show.
Yeah, you mentioned that the gas tax hasn't gone up in 20 years, and the reality is that gas prices have skyrocketed in 20 years, so the amount collected is substantially higher than back in 92.
But we're hearing from both state and federal officials that's not the case, because gasoline sales are and demand are way down, and of course that means if people are buying fewer gallons of gasoline, that the sales tax revenues, the tax revenues from that, are diminishing. And I see Bob Vitale wanting to comment on that.
The gas tax is not a percentage either. It's a flat amount. So if gas is $1.50 a gallon or $4 a gallon, it's the same amount that is added onto the price. So gas tax revenue doesn't go up with gas prices. I know there's proposals, I think in Michigan, I'm not sure if there's other states, where there's a proposal to change the way gasoline is taxed, and they want to tax it at the wholesale level rather than at the pump, and then it would be a percentage. It would be indexed, and they would collect more revenue along with higher gas prices.
That was actually a proposal that came out of the 21st Century Task Force, I think, was doing it on a percentage base and indexing it and things like that. We're coming up on the on a break here, and we'll be back in a minute or so. But for now, this is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.
Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, new websites putting up small jobs for bid or micro labor are on the rise. Clean my compost bin, buy my dog food. Desperate Americans are bidding low. Where does this go? That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
And On Point begins this afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News. Stay with us in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock. Hour 2 of All Sides begins, and it's Tech Tuesday. We'll discuss the new iPad, internet tracking, and gadgetry. Stay with us for Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher from 11 till noon, right here on 89.7 NPR News. 53 degrees in downtown Columbus, warming up to a high of 75 today with sunshine. Showers and thunderstorms are likely for tonight, a low of 54 degrees. A slight chance of rain still for Wednesday, cloudy skies and a high of 63. Partly cloudy Wednesday night and a low of 38 degrees. And sunshine again on Thursday with a high right around 60. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
How we fund major transportation projects in the United States and the lack of a long-term federal transportation funding bill is the topic in this hour of All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Stu Nicholson. I'm in for Ann for part of this week. We've heard about the lack of a new long-term transportation funding bill and how continued extensions of the bill that expired in 2009 are having a negative impact on transportation projects from experts at all levels. But we haven't really yet touched on the issue of its impact on everyday Ohioans, those of us who consume transportation services such as highways, public transit, bicycles, and other modes, which is why we asked Eric Davies to join us. Eric is the president of a new public transportation advocacy organization called Transit Columbus and also a board member of All Aboard Ohio, which is a statewide transportation advocacy organization. He's also a regular transit user himself. Welcome to the show, Eric.
Glad to be here, Stu. Thanks.
And I should mention, Eric's kind of fighting the cold here, so if you hear him, dash out, that means he's hit the cough button. But he'll still be with us here. So, Eric, what's the view on this issue through the windows on the bus or over the handlebars of a bicycle or crossing streets on foot, as well as for those of us who still, really don't have an option but to reach for the car keys and drive?
You know, Stu, I don't know how much the local citizenry pays attention to federal highway spending bills, transportation reauthorization at the national level, but I think what people see is the level of service. And you hear comments about, I don't understand why I can't get from point A to point B on the bus, or talking to a colleague of mine yesterday who is a big bicyclist and transit rider and also another local consultant who said, I want to ride my bike more, but riding right up High Street doesn't feel safe, and I'm learning to do it, but the infrastructure doesn't really support my daily bicycling. And even this past week, actually, in the Columbus Dispatch, there was a great letter to the editor from a young graduating college student at Ohio State University who said, I'm pretty much, she grew up in this area, she went to school here, and she sees the growth in ridership at COTA and wants to know why more focus on public transit isn't being given locally here in Columbus, and is weighing her options. And so if you saw that letter to the editor, this young lady is really thinking about whether or not she stays in Ohio. And I think we've seen from studies that have been published here locally that young professionals like Columbus, but the one thing that they are really saying about this community is it's lacking the walkability, the bicycling, and the public transit infrastructure they want. I think that's what people see. Now, those of us who I think are more astute about what's happening and we're advocating for better transportation at the local, state, and federal levels, we see the surface transportation bill as a major implication, both on a policy and funding level. But I'm not sure how much that gets back down to the local citizenry.
And we've got a comment from Jody from Facebook. When we visited our congressional leaders, we were told that bike trips do not generate gas tax revenue and surface transportation is paid for with a gas tax. You could say the same about mass transit. The bottom line, says Jody, is that a bicycle is a form of transportation. So if the gas tax is not the right funding mechanism, maybe we need to establish another funding stream for active transportation, such as bicycles and pedestrians. It seems like there's an appetite out there from the users, from the consumers, that, if you can't fund this properly through one form, then let's at least start looking at some other forms.
Right. And I think the gridlock in Washington is obvious to people. I think that's where it kind of hits home. And I think those of us who know that the services are limited locally and in Ohio and the United States, we know there needs to be reform in transportation funding. I don't know what those answers are. I know that there's been some great task forces meeting both in ODOT at the state level, and also, there was a big federal transportation financing reform task force that met several years ago. And again, we keep getting to these barriers that we don't seem to be able to politically work around. And I think that needs to change. And I think the public wants that change. And I think the growth in transit and the growth in bicycling and even just the growth in pedestrian, people walking places is a result of economics. And it's also a result of people just realizing there is another way. And it's not about shifting completely away from cars. It's about we've lost part of our infrastructure that we really need to reclaim and reclaim in a 21st century way.
So what are you telling your members to tell members of Congress, their representatives in Washington, and by extension also their representatives in the Ohio General Assembly? What are you telling them to tell them?
I was actually on the Hill last week, as a matter of fact, and met with a couple of legislative, congressional representatives, both on the House and Senate side. And part of our message is really we need to break through some of these places where we're stuck. We are seeing 10 COTA growing faster than in terms of its bus ridership than any major transit system in the country. And I think for too long we've looked at Ohio as being the highway state. And I think there's a major change that's happening, and we're not seeing that shift supporting us at the national policy level, and we're not seeing it here at the state level. And I think I think part of it is we're still funding transportation almost not only in a kind of a one-sided way. We're not giving parity to walkability, to bicycling, and to public transportation, but we're also Ohio is considered a donor state. And I think a lot of the reason that we're considered a donor state is because we're not bringing money back in for some of these other enhancements to public transportation, for capital building, for public transit, for better pedestrian infrastructure, and for bicycling infrastructure. So we as a state really need to look at how we can get our share of federal money back by becoming more multimodal and not just becoming very focused on highways.
Bob, what's your take on that? What are you hearing?
That's interesting. I think that might be part of the reason Ohio is a donor state. Ohio is a huge donor state. We're, I think, about the fourth biggest gap between what we send to Washington and what we get back. I really don't see anyone at the decision maker level talking about a gas tax increase, though. The only person I've talked to locally who was strongly behind that was Chester Jordan, who was the recently departed head of MORPC. So I just don't know where extra money is going to come from. ODOT has a big shortfall, which is the reason for these highway delays. They're talking about public-private partnerships, commercialization of rest areas, selling naming rights, things like that. Those don't raise nearly the amount of money that they need to raise to keep things on track. There's about a $10 billion gap between their needs and their funding.
We've got Beth on the line from Clintonville. And Beth, I apologize. You've actually been holding for a little while here, and we want to try and get you on the air and talk about some of your concerns. You've heard a lot of this discussion that's gone on here. What's your comment?
Well, I was going to say I've been to a couple of different discussions about this, and I lived in the Bay Area for 10 years. One of the things that they did was they offered tax credits to their employee for some of the larger businesses, well, for any larger businesses, to encourage, you could get a package of tickets, of bus tickets for your commuting, and then the larger companies, they would offer them through larger companies, and so it encouraged people to use public transportation more often, and it generated some revenue for the state or the city. And I just don't, I've talked about it a couple of times. To me, it just seems to be a relatively simple thing that could be done. So Nationwide or Children's Hospital or even OSU, they also have the little rent-a-cars where you can go from point A to point B, but they're only at OSU campus. And you you know, it only costs you a certain amount of money if you needed to go to the grocery store and back, but you didn't want to have a car, you don't want to have to pay for the insurance, you could have this as an option. So I'm throwing a couple things out there that, you know, may work. I don't know if that program has expanded or what the outcome has been on that, but that's another thing that has been offered.
Well, Beth, thank you. Let me run that at Eric here. Eric, you know, I mean, is there still room for things like the growth of zip cars? I think is what's called zip cars and bike rental operations or free bike, you know, exchanges.
Absolutely, and I think that's an example of a public-private approach to transportation. Zipcar and the Hertz Connect programs and some others that are out there doing these car-sharing programs, as Beth is talking about, are a great way to supplement car use for people who are reducing their vehicle miles traveled by using public transit, by walking, by bicycling, but still need to get places either around the Central Ohio region, for instance, or, you know, maybe even across state and need access to a car on occasion, whether they're a one-car family or maybe an individual who chooses not to have a car but still occasionally needs a car. So I think, again, it's a matter of we need to think creatively. And I think, if we put the basic infrastructure in place, and I think that's where it comes back to, how do we pay for it and do we raise the gas tax? And I know that politically is a huge landmine, but let's face it, it's over $8,000 per year to own a car, and this is – these are statistics that come from the American Automobile Association. So even if we paid a few hundred more dollars out of our taxes or in gas taxes every year out of our pockets, if that meant every family or every household could think about car usage in a different way, it could lead to huge savings. And I think, again, too, if you look at when you have some of the public infrastructure in place, it allows private companies to come in and supplement that infrastructure with things like car sharing programs, with operating, building and constructing the infrastructure. I mean, this is all private company driven. So we need to look very creatively at how we fund transportation, and then how we really get the expertise we need and the infrastructure in place.
I think another viewpoint. We've got Raymond on the line from what is billed as Old North Thomas. No, I guess he just left us. But let me go back and talk to a point that you just brought up, because it's really kind of interesting. We talked about, you know, all of these public transportation, bikes, pedestrian amenities. These are all really great at the local and even to some extent the regional level. But if you need or want to travel intercity within Ohio, we're still in a state where the only option is to drive. Flying, between Cleveland and Columbus is an outrageously expensive proposition. But we still have essentially a situation where we really don't have that degree of intercity travel. So where do we need to be going with this?
Well, I mean, we do have some intercity travel that's not car. If you look at Greyhound and Megabus and some of the services being offered there from Columbus to other places. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, that's still very limited infrastructure versus what we really need, and particularly if there would be a major spike in gas prices or a gas shortage that would really require people to start thinking outside the box. I would clearly say that we need passenger rail services, and I think we've seen some attempts to make that happen in Ohio. And we've seen some shortcomings with the way the systems were being developed. But at the same time, there's been this attitude of, well, if we get to a certain point and we don't see that we can develop passenger rail, let's just end the effort. So we are in the process of now delaying a $1.5 billion, maybe almost $2 billion project in downtown Columbus for a two-mile stretch of freeway. And yet we gave $400 million back to the feds that would have provided passenger rail across the entire state of Ohio. So I think we need to think differently again about how we spend money and think about where the most bang for the buck is. And I think we do in Ohio need passenger rail service. Columbus is the largest city in the United States without any type of rail coming through our city for people to use. We have great freight rail through the city. We have no passenger rail, period, end of sentence. And I think that's a real deficiency for us as a region, both in terms of transportation access and also economically and in terms of congestion and just being able to survive any kind of gas price spike as we go into the future. And it's not just about reaching Ohio cities like Cleveland. It's about reaching Pittsburgh, D.C., Baltimore, Chicago, St. Louis.
Connecting centers of commerce.
Connecting places.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Bob, what's your take on where we seem to be going in the last few minutes of the show here? I referred earlier to the 21st Century Transportation Task Force that was put together under former Governor Strickland, and they came up with a fairly clear list of recommendations. A lot of the ideas that Eric has talked about. Do you see any chance at all that some of this may be revived or discussed, at the state level anytime soon here in Ohio?
I'm not sure. I know locally the city of Columbus has done a lot more with, building bike lanes, making streets more kind of share the road type principles on streets. I'm not sure. I remember one of the first things Director Ray did when he started at ODOT, I remember covering an announcement that funding for public transit was being shifted out of transit. So, and one of the provisions in the House transportation bill months ago, and it's since been dropped, was to end dedicated funding for public transit. Public transit would have gone year to year in the budget and tried to get whatever money it could. There wouldn't have been a dedicated source. So I kind of get the sense that as funding becomes uncertain and starts declining, there's kind of a retrenchment to where it goes to where people are traveling right now, and that's still highways. So I think it reminds me of when school districts cut art and music. They go for the things that the leaders don't consider fundamental to the mission. So I kind of see that with transportation. I don't know if that attitude will change as gas keeps rising or not, but
that seems to be the crux right here is if gasoline prices rise, which they seems to be that they will, and how high they go, that may seem to have the ultimate impact on whether we answer these questions or not. So, Bob Vitale, Eric Davies, I want to thank you for joining us on All Sides for Ann Fisher. And thank you, all of you who've listened in this morning and called in and parting questions on Facebook and email. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.